Welcome to Shir Targumim, Parshas Pinchas. The Shir this evening is co-sponsored by Dr. Feitel Rubin, marking the art side of his grandmother, Chana Bas Peltz. The Neshama should have an aliyah. She's seen much nachas ruach from the Mitarmis and Samaisim Tovim, families involved in. The Shir is also sponsored by Marty and Fran Shulman, marking the art side of her mother, which was yesterday. Liba Bas Noach Yaakov, again, the Neshama should have an aliyah. Should see much nachas ruach from the Torah, mitzvahs, and ma'asim tovim that the family is involved in. There are two insights that we have in the beginning of Parshas Pinchas from the Targum Yonason ben Uziel, and both of them, both the ones we're presenting tonight, turn on the following issue. Sometimes when an individual is identified in Chumash, that same individual has a double identity. He's also somebody else, and even though he's not identified as such. The first example thereof starts in the very beginning of the Sedra. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lema, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Heshev Eschamosim Yal B'nai Yisrael. As described at the end of Parshas Balak, Pinchas, the grandson of Aaron HaKohen, through his actions of kanos, of zealousness on behalf of the Ribbono Shel Olam, caused HaKadosh Baruch Hu to cease being angry against the Jewish people. Lachain Emar, therefore say to him, to Pinchas, Hinini no saying lo es brisi shalom. Behold, I am going to bestow upon him my covenant of peace. What exactly is the covenant of peace? So, perhaps on the simple level it means protection in some ways. The Ben Ezra writes, Shelo yogur me'achei zimri. After all, Pinchas has just been responsible for killing the Nasi of Shevet Shimon, Zimri ben Salu. You could imagine that people would want to come after him, would want to take revenge. So Hinini no saying lo es brisi shalom, I'm going to protect him, I'm going to put my covenant of peace upon him. The Yonasan Uziel gives a different interpretation. He writes, B'shvua emar le min shemi, I swear, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, and tell Pinchas in my name, Ho'ano gozar le yaskiyomi shlom, I am going to make for him my covenant of peace, which means Vebedine Maloch Kayom. I am going to make him an everlasting Maloch Viechela Olam. And Pinchas is going to live forever. Limavasara Geulto Besof Yomayo. Such that he is the harbinger, the herald of the ultimate Geulo, the ultimate redemption, which will come about at the end of days. See, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel is doesn't quite spell it out, but it's pretty spelled out. He's alluding to a idea which we have in certain midrashim, is found in the Pirkei de Rebbe Elezer, and the Rishonim quoted that Pinchas ze Eliyahu, that the individual who's known in Chumash over here as Pinchas, who is distinguished by his great kanos, his great zeal on behalf of the Ribbono Shel Olam for sticking up for what's right, even when it presents tremendous difficulties, that very same Pinchas reappears later on in history as Eliyahu HaNavi, and ultimately Eliyahu is going to live forever, again as described in the Psukim and Melachim. He goes up to the heavens without dying, and such essentially the promise that was given to Pinchas over here, the Brisi Shalom, means that Pinchas is never going to die. He's going to perhaps use a different credit card a little bit later on in history. His credit card is going to say Eliyahu as opposed to saying Pinchas. Maybe he kept both credit cards, I don't know. But nonetheless, he is going to be that individual, Eliyahu HaNavi, who lives forever. So the bris of shalom, of peace, means eternal life. It's not simply that he's going to be protected in the here and now from the relatives of Zimri who might seek to take revenge against him, but he's going to be protected from death itself insofar as he's going to live forever. So this idea that Pinchas is Eliyahu is certainly mentioned in many Midrashim. The Yonasan ben Uziel writes it over here. Not all of the Midrashim seem to necessarily buy into the idea. The Rishonim very often, when they speak about the idea of Pinchas Eliyahu, make reference to the Manda Omar, those who hold that Pinchas is Eliyahu, implying that not everybody necessarily agrees with that identification, but certainly that identification is made over here by the Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel in explaining the pasuk itself. A very different example of a person who carries two names and is identified one way in one place and elsewhere by a different way appears just a few psukim later in the Yonasan ben Uzziel, where the Torah tells us what were the identities of the Nasi Yisrael and the Isha Midyanis who were killed by Pinchas. V'shem Ish Yisrael Muke, Asher Hukas HaMidyanis Zimri Ben Salu. So Zimri Ben Salu, as mentioned, was the Jewish man who was killed, Nasi Beisav LaShimoni, who was a prince of the tribe of Shimon. V'shem Ho'isha HaMuka HaMidyanis, the name of the woman who had been killed by Pinchas, the Midianite woman, was Kozbi Bas Tsur, Rosh Umos Beisav Ben Midyan Hu. This individual Tsur was the head, was a prince among the Midyanim as well. Rashi points out that we're going to encounter this individual Tsur a little bit later on in the Chumash when the Klal Yisrael go to war against the Midyanim and they kill the five kings of Midyan, and there he's mentioned among those five kings. Rashi writes, who was this Tsur? Echad mechameshes malchei Midyan. He was one of the five kings of Midyan. As the Pasuk says later on in Perek Lamed Aleph, es Evi, ves Rekem, ves Tsur. V'hu ayachashiv mikulam. And even though in the list of the five kings of Midyan, Tsur is listed third, which would lead you to think that, relatively speaking, he wasn't the highest ranking king of Midyan. Nonetheless, says Rashi, you should know, in point of fact, Tsur was actually the most chashuv, he was the most important among these five kings of Midyan. As it says over here, Rosh Umos, base of B'Midyan Hu. He was the Rosh Umos, he was the head of all of these nations. In other words, like the Plishtim, later on in history, the Midyanim also had five kings or princes, again, five rulers. But among those five rulers, there was one head ruler. There was one who ruled over the others, and apparently Tsur was that individual. So why then is he listed third later on in Sefer Bamidbar? Since he acted in a disgraceful fashion, he gave over his own daughter to act in a licentious fashion in order to entice Klal Yisrael to engage in Avodah Zarah, a terrible, terrible thing by any standard. So he was degraded, you know, he was knocked down in rank from being the top, you know, to being number three. Okay, so we know a little bit about this individual Tsur. But comes the Yonasan ben Uzziel, and he adds an eye-opening identification. Vishum itiso ketilta, the name of the woman who had been killed, Midyanesa, the Midianite, Kozbi bras Tsur, she was Kozbi, the daughter of Tsur, Demiskaria Shlonai, and her name was actually Shlonai. Now, Kozbi is a nickname of some sort from the word Kozov, which implies falsehood. She acted in a way which was false, but if you were to look at her credit card, which being that she was a princess, probably had a nice limit on it, the actual name that she used was Shlonai. So that's similar to a Gemara in Sanhedrin writes that Lo Kozbi Shma Ela Shvilnoi Shema, right? Similar kind of name as depicted by the Gemara. And who was her father? Bras Balak. This individual Tsur is none other than Balak, who gave his name to the last parsha. How does that come about? So now we start putting some pieces together. Rashi told us in last week's parsha that Balak himself was originally from Midian. And he had been asked to come over and become the king of Moab because of the need to stand up against Klal Yisrael. So he was originally, it's not so hard to imagine that in his role as king, as the leading king of Midian, he used one official name. And when he became the king of Moab, he used a different official name. Could be that at birth he was given a third name altogether. But this individual Tsur and Balak are one and the same. In other words, it's Balak's own daughter who is being sent out to engage in licentious acts with Klal Yisrael. It's she who's killed by Pinchas. And in a sense, you know, Parshas Balak comes full circle because Balak was a major figure in most of Parshas Balak, and he's a major figure in that last episode, as described in Parshas Balak as well. There's an interesting comment that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh has over here, where the Or HaChaim writes that the woman is described, Kozbi Bas Tzur, again, who we now know as Shlonai Bras Barak, Balak, is described as HaMidyonis, the Midianite woman. Writes the Or HaChaim, Nira Lomar Kilo Haisa Isha Acheres Midyonis Bumufkara Zulasa. Why is she called the Midyanis? You know, with the direct article, it seems to imply that there was only one. And indeed, says the Or HaChaim, when we read the end of Parshas Balak, it talks about the Benos Moav, the daughters of Moav, engaging in things with Klal Yisrael. But there was actually only one Midyanis, only a single woman from Midyan, who actually participated in those acts. And that's the way she's described as well at the end of Parshas Balak. V'lazeh gam came for Parshas Balak, kishehizkir v'yakrev elechav, when it talks about how Zimri brought Cosby close, Omar es ha-Midyanis, v'yakrev elechav es ha-Midyanis. He brought the Midianite woman, not a Midianite woman, the Midianite woman. She was the only one who was there. U'kifizeh lo ifkiru Midyan b'noseyam. The truth is, says the Or HaChaim, with this one exception, the people of Midyan did not give over their daughters to engage in these licentious acts with Klal Yisrael. V'chem timsa shekamar akosu v'yachel ha'am liznos el benos moav. When the Torah at the end of Parshas Balak describes how the people were getting involved with the daughters of Moav, halamadita ki hamufkaros moavios hayu. The only women who were involved in this whole episode, with one exception, were from Moav. There was one Midianis. Everybody else was from Moav. And then the Or HaChaim adds the following. Uvazeh motzasi nachas ruach b'maymer chazal sha'amru kitzur sh'neragim nesichei Midyan hu Balak. This helps us understand that which Chazal says. It's not a Gemara, it's a Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah. Can we see it's quoted over here by the other son, Ben Uziel, as well. Says the Or HaChaim, where did Chazal get this idea from that Tzur is Balak? I mean, it seems on the surface to be a sort of random identification. Why would we assume that Tzur is Balak? At least before, when we spoke about Pinchas and Eliyahu, Pinchas and Eliyahu both share a character trait of kana'os, of tremendous zeal, as described both in the Chumash and in the Navi. We also know that even if one were not to identify Pinchas with Eliyahu, he lives an unusually long life. We find him throughout the period of the Shoftim, you know, playing a role in various events that take place. So, you know, even if you don't identify with him with Eliyahu, he certainly leads a long life. So the identification of Pinchas with Eliyahu rests on certain things which are apparent in the Chumash and the Navi themselves. You know, a common denominator of Kanos, a common denominator of longevity. But where do we come to say that Tzur and Balak are the same person? So writes the Or HaChaim, Uvishvil shehifkir bita horidum migdulasa, right? Shehaya rosh lekulam. Sarich lodas migilos sodze kitzur Balak. Who revealed the secret, so to speak, to Chazal, that Tzur and Balak are one and the same? V'lidvareinu yesh ta'am nochon lomar kein. Says the Or HaChaim, I think I can explain why it is that Chazal came to the conclusion that Tzur and Balak are one and the same. Kevon shlomotzinu ela midyanis achas. In light of what we said before, says the Or HaChaim, that there was only one midyanis who went and was mafkir herself to be with the Jewish people. There were tons of people, of daughters of Moav, but only one midyanis what possessed that one Midianite girl to go and be mafkir herself? Kana ben Shoel. Manishtanis Midyanis zo, shiyatsis omikobinos Midyan. What made this girl decide on her own to be the one representative of Midyan to go into the Jewish camp? Elevadai ki huze bolok, asher sachar alenu bilom, viyatso vikiem atsoso bevito, vahu tsur shazilzo bichvodu lakayim eitzoro shal bilom. Says the Arachayim, now that we realize that there was only one Midyanis, you can understand very well why Chazal came to the conclusion that Tzur and Balak are one and the same. What did, according to Chazal, what did Bilam tell Balak at the very end of Parshas Balak? Bilam tells Balak, look, I can't curse them, but there's another way to undermine the Jewish people. The God of the Jewish people hates licentiousness. So, you know, get the Jewish people involved in licentious behavior, and then you'll bring them down. Balak, we know, was dead set against harming the Jewish people. That's the whole last parasha. That's why he hired Bilam in the first place. So, you know, so to speak, he was zoriz lidvar mitzvah. He was so anxious to carry out the words of Bilam to bring down the Jewish people that essentially he volunteered his own daughter. None of the other Midianite girls wanted to go, but, you know, his own daughter, I guess she felt she didn't have a choice. He volunteered his own daughter to go and be the catalyst to bring down the Jewish people. And as such, the identification of Balak with Tzur makes sense, says the Arachaim. If there's going to be one girl who's going to go out, it makes sense that it would be the daughter of Balak, who was so moved and inspired in a bad way, in a terrible way, to want to do terrible things against the Jewish people.
How come in the next parasha, Klal Yisrael went to against?
Okay, very, very good. Okay, Bez Asher, we'll come back to talk about that.
Is the reason why the names are changed by the Torah? Why does he use his God's name?
Right, so you could, again, you could ask the question, okay, so if Balak is Tzur, so make up your mind, so which name do you want to use? So again, in this particular case, I think you can advance an explanation, which is not so difficult, namely, when he was acting as the king of Midian, his name was Tzur. When he was acting as, you know, the king of Moab, as we find throughout Parshas Balak, his name was Balak. You'll say, what, just because he changed jobs, he changed names, right? But in an official capacity, that might be true. We certainly find, that there's certain kings of certain nations that have names that are given to them because they're the king. You know, Pyro comes to mind, Avimelech comes to mind, the Das of Canaan writes that Og was also not his real name. It was a name that was given to all of the kings of the area of Boshan. Even again, in our own day and age, you know, when a person ascends to the papacy, right, a person becomes the pope, a cardinal becomes the pope, so they change his name, right? So, why do you have to change his name just because he got a new job? So that's part of the malchus that's associated with the job, that we're going to give you a different name. So it's not so hard to imagine, I think, that this individual, who knows what his real name was, and who knows what his birth name was? Maybe it was, you know, Fred or something like that. I don't know. You know, but when he's the king of Moab, he's Balak. When he's the king of Midian, he's Tzur. And those are official royal names that are given to him that reflect, you know, which country he happens to be serving at any given time. You know, so I think, again, in this particular case, it's not so hard to imagine that that this one person is named Tzur or Balak, depending on which country he's being associated with in all of this. If this identification is correct, so an interesting thing comes out just in reading the Chumash, the Pasuk, as we mentioned, says later on that when Klal Yisrael went to war against Midian, they killed the Chameshes Malchei Midian, including Tzur, and the Pasuk says explicitly that they killed Bilam in that battle as well, as Bilam ben Ba'ar Hargu Becharev. So it turns out that not only does the Torah tell us the fate of Bilam, but it tells us the fate of Balak as well. The same war which led to the death of Bilam led to the death of Balak. You know, these two co-conspirators were killed off, you know, at the very same time. So again, a very interesting tidbit which the Yonasan ben Uzziel places in. Again, it's not, as the Archai mentions, it's also found in the Bamidbar Rabbah. It's not exclusively. The Yonasan ben Uzziel makes this correlation between Tzur and Balak, but it does shed some interesting light on the story as a whole. Just go back a little bit. After promising Pinchas Brisi Shalom, so the pasuk goes on to say, "V'hoysolo Lazaro Acharav Bris Kohunas Olam." For Pinchas and for his children afterwards, there will be a covenant of eternal kahuna. Rashi explains, why do you have to give kahuna to Pinchas? Even though the kahuna has already been given to Aaron and his children, the kahuna was only given to Aaron and his sons who were anointed together with him, and to all those children who will be born after the hamshacha, after they were anointed. Aval Pinchas shenolad kodem loche, but Pinchas had been born previously, velo nimshach, and he had not been anointed together with Aaron and his sons. And Pinchas was a grandson who was already alive when Aaron was dead. It was designated to be the Kohen Gadol. Lo balach lal kahuna. Right, he had not up until this point he had not yet become a Kohen, and now and only now does he become a Kohen by virtue of his act of kanos. The Onos HaMeduzil elaborates on this and says not only is it granting kahuna to Pinchas specifically, but there's also a special gift of kahuna which is given at this point to all of the Kohanim. In exchange for the fact that Pinchas was made fun of by the other Shvatim, again, as Rashi indicates, they said, you know, what are you starting up and killing this Midyani woman? You yourself descend from Midyanim. In exchange for that, I am going to give Pinchas a connection to the Kohuna Gedola. V'cholaf de'achad rumcha b'dera'e, in exchange for the fact that he grabbed a spear in his arm, u'mechol midyonesa l'beis basas kevasa, and he speared the Midyanis in her intestines, v'tsali b'pume alame beis Yisrael, and with his mouth Pinchas davened on behalf of Klal Yisrael. The davening is not mentioned in Chumash itself, but in the Pasuk in Tehillim that describes the event of Pinchas standing up with Kanos at this particular point, says v'yamod Pinchas v'yifalel, that Pinchas stood up and he davened. So in other words, we find in Tehillim that he davened. So in the merit of his grabbing the spear with his hand and spearing the woman in her intestines and davening with his mouth, Yizkun Kahanayil Utlos Matnon, there are going to be three matanos, three special gifts that are set aside from Kohanim from here on in. Deroa Velua Vikevsa. The zroa l'chayayim in the keva, right? The zroa of the animal, the forearm of the animal, the l'chayayim, the cheeks of the animal, representing the davening that Pinchas did with his mouth, and the keva, the intestines, the stomach of the animal, are all given to the kohanim. Usehei lev livnoi basroi kiyom revus olam cholaf de kanile lokei. And that gift is going to be given to him and his children afterwards in exchange for the fact that he stood up for the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel over here suggests that the Matanos Kehuna, you know, specific Matanos Kehuna, Zerah L'Chayayim and Keva, were given to the Kohanim as a whole in response to the bravery, to the courage that was exhibited by Pinchas. So in other words, not only was he zoche for, you know, certain gifts on behalf of himself and his children, but his act was ultimately beneficial on behalf of the Shevet Kohuna as a whole. It's interesting to note, just in accordance with this, the Matanos, the Zerah L'Chayayim and Keva are only mentioned by the Chumash and Sefer Dvarim. right? So it fits in, although many Matanos Kahuna are mentioned at the end of Parshas Korach, Zerua L'Chayim and Keva are only mentioned by the Torah later on. Yeah, I think Parshas Shoftim, later on in Sefer Dvarim. So according to the Onos of Ben Uziel, that the Zerua L'Chayim and Keva were a new set of Matanos that were only introduced in light as a reward for what Pinchas carried out, the placement of these Matanos in Sefer Dvarim makes sense because they were only given at this particular point in time. Okay, we'll pick up here. Be'ezus Hashem, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakos Es Yisrael, L'Fikach, Hirbo Lahem Torah U'Mitzvos, Shenemar, Adonai Chodesh,